Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks. Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill. This is Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio, in studio with Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And we are talking again about how to tell if a play-based program is really play-based. There's this continuum. There are programs that are deeply play-based, and there are programs that call themselves play-based and really aren't. And there's a lot of us right there someplace in the middle where we're on that journey. And so what we did is we put a call out in the Facebook for how to tell if a program was play-based, and we're picking our way through that list. And this is part two of that series. And so the goal here isn't to beat up on anybody or be too judgy. The goal is to kind of reflect on some of the practices and think about ways we could be more mindful, more thoughtful.
And to be consistent. If we're claiming to be this, then...
we should always be this.
Yes.
Not just on Wednesdays.
Not just on Wednesdays when I'm in a good mood.
What do we got?
Overemphasis on quote-unquote academics, such as worksheets and flashcards and things like that.
Yeah.
The tricky part there, though, is that, see, for me, the verbiage issue, right? So academic, I can talk to you for an hour as to how Plato is academic, uh-huh. right? But I understand their use of this word.
Yeah. What's the right number of worksheets in an early learning, a play-based environment?
None.
How many sets of flashcards?
None.
Okay, well... So if you've got those things and
they're out, there
are probably a few more steps down the path towards play-based that you could take. And so we get caught up in the worksheets and the craptivities and the flashcards and this kind of stuff because, for some reason programs think parents want to see it and, you know, they sell them in the early learning catalog, so they must be developmentally appropriate. And so we buy them cause we got some grant money. And the reality is there's not a lot there. There's not a lot of good stuff going on with those things. And yet, even programs that might have a lot of other positive things going on in them feel the need to have some of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wish some terminology we used in the past, I wish it was something we could be a little bit better at breaking up with. The need for those kind of things.
I expect if you are thinking that you need to use them, then I would like to know why. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? And who is it for?
Yeah. Yeah. And people have a hard time doing that. And then the follow-up question is if you can articulate those things for why you're using that worksheet, my next question would be, couldn't they learn that better if they were playing?
Yes. I have had teachers say that the reason that they do worksheets is because of the increase or the strengthening of fine motor, right? Because they're holding like the pencil or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I will always say to them, if I can point out in this space 10 other ways that you can do that in it with a more playful fashion, you know,
will you get rid of
it? Will you get rid of it? And it's funny. Sometimes people have just never thought it through and they're like, oh, wow, yo, wow, hadn't thought about that. Uh-huh. But then other times people like they still want to. It's like an abusive relationship. They still just want to go back to the worksheet
because of what they know.
Because it's familiar, right? Yeah.
So a part of getting away from that stuff and making a lot of these changes, I think, requires us to bring the parents along on that journey with us. And so a big part of this, when you start taking those baby steps towards change, like we talked about in the last episode, requires helping the parents take those steps as well. And so part of our job becomes...
parent education.
What Lisa said, because I was about ready to burp club soda. Oh, thank you. And that looks, I mean, that's going to look different for different programs, but I think it involves human-to-human conversations and again, lots of baby steps, lots of individual, I like using pictures, you know, here's your kid, and here's what they, just a couple short sentences describing what they were learning while they were doing that play thing. Grace thing.
Yes.
And a little bit of that on a daily basis will really help feed that parent understanding that yes, there is learning going on in this thing that just looks like goofing around, and that'll help them see the value in it.
The other thing that allows too is the empowerment of the adults who then leave your building at some point and move on into other spaces, and they're going to bring all of that knowledge with them. Being willing to share what we know, and I'm not sure why sometimes that's something that teachers struggle with. It's okay to let parents know about your theories or your technique. It's
yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
like,
well,
you don't have to be the keeper of that. You're not like you're not the only one that's allowed to know how to see or do, like share that shit.
Yeah, it's not like some sort of magic spell you don't want to unleash on the world. It's a little thing you can share. And the other thing that we know about learning and adult learning is that when you're able to share something like that, it reinforces your own knowledge and understanding of it too. You know you really know it when you can effectively share it with somebody else and pass it along. What else we got?
When there are more rules than children. I like that one.
Yeah, that's a direct quote from somebody that posted on the Facebook. And we see that a lot. There's a lot of programs that are kind of on one end of the play spectrum, the play continuum, have a lot of rooms, a lot of rules. The rule-to-child ratio.
Rule-to-child ratio.
I wonder what that'd be fun to figure. There's some research for somebody to do.
I'm going to post something on Facebook right now.
We get caught up in our rules and they're often rules that the kids had no input in as well. And so pay attention to your rules. If you've got a lot of them, if you got more rules than kids, you might need to make some progress on the play continuum. If that play to
Your rule to child ratio. So I just put on Facebook, what is your rule to child ratio? How many rules do you have? How many kids?
And so when we create those spaces where kids are really the leaders of their play, we find
the leaders of the play.
We find that we need the need for them just kind of vanishes.
I have one.
The kids own it.
People aren't for hurting. That's my only rule. People are not for hurting. We deal with everything else as it comes up.
Boom.
Done. But I'm able to have that rule because the secret is controlling the environment instead of trying to control the children.
And that's the rules are, it's about power and control and us needing to have it. But Jeff, if we don't have rules, there'll be chaos. That hasn't been my experience.
That hasn't been mine either. The only thing that a play-based, child-centered, playful learning thing, space, is giving up is the adults' need to control the children. That's it. There's still structure. There's still boundaries. There's still expectations. There's consistency. But the adults' need to be the boss of children is what we work on, letting people start to shed.
Yeah.
Which sometimes they didn't even realize that they had it.
Yeah, you know, yeah,
because
exactly.
I was told that you have to sit 1, 2, 3 eyes on me, crisscross applesauce. Okay, well, where'd that come from? And what would happen if they didn't? And what is the worst possible thing that would happen if the kid was leaning on their belly with their hands in their, you know, like, what is that? What did you call this? Hands with their head like in their hands if they're laying on their belly while you're reading a book. Like,
yeah, elbows on the floor.
Yeah.
Wrists together, Or standing up, or in the block area on the other side of the room.
So you start investigating, you turn that lens inward, right, and start doing some of that self-personal growth, and you realize, wow, you know, I bring some stuff to the table.
And that is so hard to put into practice.
What is hard to put into practice?
The whole being able to let go of some of that stuff. I caught myself with this the other day. Yesterday, before we picked you up at the airport, grandbaby, Papa, tell me a story. And so I start making up a story for her, and for a while she's like eye contact, and she's listening, and then her eyes go someplace else, and then I let the story trail off because she stops and she looks at me. I thought, and I said, well, you weren't listening, and as I'm saying it, I'm catching myself because of course you were listening. You were also looking, and so this is hard stuff we're talking about. It's not easy. Another episode we've got on the board as the potential is that this is simple, but it's not easy. The theories and stuff and themselves are not really complicated.
No,
it's the putting it into practice that takes lots of work and lots of reflection and
we
can be a little bit more challenging.
I think we overthink things.
Yeah. And so we're all constantly on this journey. What else we got?
Too much no, don't stop, hurry.
And not enough yes.
And not enough yes.
Uh-huh.
If you're touring a school and you hear a lot of that chances are it's not a play-based place.
And so, yeah, because that's language that's trying to, it's trying to restrict. It's trying to restrict choice. It's trying to restrict activity. It's trying to restrict movement. And what we're going for is environments that are supportive of all of those things.
No loose parts.
So what's that got to do with anything?
If you don't have any loose parts.
So loose parts are good?
Loose parts are awesome.
We want loose parts.
We want more loose parts.
Yeah, I think when you have, the more bits and pieces from the recycling bin that are in the play space and the less, the fewer bits of plastic fruit.
You do not need any more plastic apples.
I think for me, we could draw some sort of graph on. We could graph those, and I think the more play based programs have fewer plastic apples and more recycled
tires.
Bits. Yeah, more tires.
I liked how this one was phrased. That the teachers are too evident in the space.
In a program that's not play based. The teachers are more evident,
and we've talked about this the last few episodes actually. That notion of being the guide on the side, not the sage on the stage. But if the teacher is always front and center, or needing to be seen, as it were,
yeah. When the
always got their hands in all the business.
Yeah, when we make ourselves the center of attention, it takes away the child's ability to be the ownership of the activity.
Why are you so burpy?
I drank a lot of club soda today.
Why are you drinking so much club soda?
Because I got to run the computer because Tiffany's not here. And I can't be licking
you gotta up. Stay sober.
Yeah. Thanks, Tiffany. Hey, by the way, listeners, by the time this episode airs, Miss Tiffany, our podcast buddy, is going to be a brand new mommy. So if you know her on the Facebook, you probably already know that. But tell her we had said hi because she's probably too busy changing diapers and whatever it is mommies do to listen to podcasts anymore. Love you,
aww.
Tiffany. We miss you.
Miss you.
No, maybe the baby, maybe we're the white noise in the baby nursery.
Oh, wouldn't that be awesome?
That'd be awesome. We should apply for that.
Then we meet the baby and they're like, whoa,
I know you.
We had another post of a too clean and tidy. That was a theme throughout. Punishments and rewards.
Oh, that again.
Yeah. Call Alfie.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to that power and control. The programs that are further down that path towards play based are allowing kids to work out their own problems and realizing that not every when you have fewer rules, you have fewer things to punish.
There you go.
You also, when you give up power and let the children have it, there's more opportunity for building that growth mindset and intrinsic motivation instead of fixed mindset and extrinsic motivation. And those are big things when it comes to the rewards and the punishments and that. I would be really surprised to walk into a very play-based program and find a behavior chart. I'll throw this one out there. If you've got a behavior chart in your program or your classroom, you probably got, and you're calling yourself play based, you've probably got some reflecting to consider.
Mm-hmm.
What did the Facebook tell you?
I said, what is your rule to child ratio? How many rules do you have? How many kids? Morgan says she has 24 and 5 year olds and they have 4 rules.
Well, that's a pretty good ratio, probably.
Oh, this lady, my post was misunderstood, I think. She actually gave us her ratio.
Reading copper. What else we got?
Curriculum is forced on the children and the themes have no context to their lives. You know, like doing snow in Phoenix?
Yeah.
Or doing ocean in Indiana?
A lot of kangaroo talk here in the Midwest.
Yeah, you should not be talking about anything that the kids can't actually experience. Done.
And this is a whole thing, because, I mean, themes for a long time was a big, it still is kind of a big thing, isn't it?
Well,
and
here's the thing, because I get asked that all the time, right? There's like the 5 questions we always get asked. What do you think about themes? Well, that's a loaded question, because the theme isn't necessarily the problem. It's how it's executed. How you arrived at it. If it's just that we do birds every, you know, third week in March and we have since the beginning of time, I maybe might start questioning that. If all of a sudden birds became a hot topic because one flew in the window and died, you know, there's context there. There's a reason for the kids to be interested in it, and it's not being done to them, and school is done to children.
And so if those themes grow out of an adult sitting down with their calendar, their planner for the year, and figuring all those things out months and months in advance, not play-based.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've been trying to figure out the right phrase. I haven't figured out the phrase I like for that thing that is play-ish.
Give me an example.
Well, it's kind of
play light.
That's playish. It looks like play. Play-esque. It's like those times where the kids are doing the best they can with what they got.
Oh, I see.
And so it's not the real play that we would aspire to with the definitions that we went through in those previous 8 episodes, but it's something along the continuum. So I don't know if play-ish, play-esque, play-like.
I get it.
There's
play
a word
light,
there.
L-A-T-E.
So there's something there, but because the kids will be as playful as possible with their surroundings
or what they've got.
You put them in. And there's probably always an opportunity to step back and give them a little bit more power and control over it all. What else we got?
The rope.
The rope.
The lineup line rope.
Oh, yeah. Somebody posted that if the kids are always sitting crisscross applesauce and that the only way they can move about the world is to everybody be holding up to the lineup rope, you're probably not quite as play-based as you might think you are.
And that I actually use that example in the workshop and say, because if you currently use a rope.
And talk about the whole rope thing and everything that's good about it.
Crickets.
Okay, well, there's everything that was good about it. What problems do you have with it?
Quite a few, actually. One, it's a false sense of safety, right? Because the kids think because they're holding the rope, they can cross the street when really nobody's teaching, you know, stop, look, listen, pay attention, is there a car coming? The only kid who likes the rope is the kid in the front because he's, you know, jerking everybody around. And the kid in the back has like whiplash.
Because he's tied it around his neck.
Exactly. And there's one girl in the middle who's like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, spinning around, spinning around, spinning around. But Again, I never deprive children the opportunity to have conversations and figure things out. And if right now I think everybody's safe because of the rope, you can teach. Kids have been walking through spaces for a long time before anybody invented the rope. But what I like to say at the gigs is that if you currently use a rope and you go back on Monday after a conference and throw the rope away just because it sounds like Lisa Murphy said I couldn't have a rope anymore. Don't do that because... Excuse me, I'm choking. Then the kids are like, "Shit, where's the rope?" You know, like you change the rules, and that's why the 10-day rule is there. You know, yeah. you gotta think about that.
And you don't want to throw the rope away. You want to add the rope to your loose parts.
That's right.
The programs that use the rope for moving about are less play based than the programs that freely put rope out in the play space. I'll still never forget the forest school we visited where we spent hours with a group of children chasing Tasha around with this was rope. This is like 100-foot section pieces of rope.
I love that, Bucks.
And running around and tying each other to trees and all this kind of stuff. And it was awesome. And yet too many programs shy away from that because everybody's intentionally trying to strangle themselves and choke.
What's my favorite quote? Remember when I first met you? Children are curious, not suicidal. Crazy.
What else we got?
When we do things to children that we wouldn't want done to us.
So what's that look like?
If you are lifting up a sleeping child on a nap mat.
Well, you don't like to be randomly lifted up when you're
and
sleeping.
And have a graham cracker stuffed in my mouth.
Hey, time to wake up. Have a graham cracker.
We got to get on the yard.
It's like they're being waterboarded with milk because they're falling over. And it's like you're dumping the milk into their faces. It's almost time to go home. I got to be able to write down you had snacks. So we had to get reimbursed for it. Nobody wants to have
I think
stuff
sometimes
done
we,
at them.
I think sometimes it's just because we're not mean, horrible people. We're just go, 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 go,
yeah.
go, 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 go. We're so focused on what we think we need to be doing that we're missing what we should be doing.
Yeah, and sometimes because the system that we've created or we've created for ourselves or are working in, forces us into those situations, we often start feeling, though, like we're the worst person in the world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in those moments, I think what we'd suggest you do is you pull back.
Yes.
And you reevaluate and you think about where you can maybe make some mindful changes. What else we got?
When adults are interfering with what children are doing in order to get to some kind of a perceived adult outcome. Like, I need it to be this, so...
I need you to be kindergarten ready, and I need to be able to check this off the box, and so I'm going to push you in this direction?
Probably. I'm not sure. I didn't read it, but I think also a little bit like with the wiggly eyes even, like you get two because two. And
We don't want to run out of wiggly eyes, and we've got an allotment of them, so here's your two wiggly eyes, and it's going to look more like a duck if I cut it out, and those kind of things. And that interference.
I think any time we're interfering.
Yeah.
Because why? Again, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And who is it for? Where did it come from? What is the intention behind your work? And I think asking ourselves those questions about intention and mindfulness probably will assist us in making leaps and strides down this evolution, this cycle of changing our mind and getting towards where we want to be.
Yeah, and the moment we step in and interfere is, if you look at the definition of play, is when it stops being play. Now the children might get back at play fairly quickly once we move on, but that whole moment that we're interfering, it's a
block.
It's not
play. There. It's like a
now,
pause.
We got to do some housekeeping here, Lisa. We could wrap up right now and come back with another episode of this, or we could power through these. What do you think is best? We're at about 24 minutes.
Probably
right now.
Do another episode.
Should we wrap it up?
Yeah.
Hey, people, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I think we got one more left in this series that'll come here fairly soon in the future. We're digging you. Check out Playvolution HQ. Browse around. Join if you want to. Become part of the community. The whole idea here is to build a community for people interested in playful learning because we seem, as a community, seem to be kind of disjointed and disconnected on the interwebs. And we want to create create a landing place, a home base for you. And there's resources there, but mostly there's a chance to connect and share and grow as a community. So check it out, playvolutionhq.com. Back soon with another episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the show. Join us online at playvolutionhq.com and learn how to support the show at explorationsearlylearning.com/support. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.